Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Peyto Energy Trust third quarter results conference call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Darren Gee, President and CEO. Please go ahead, Mr. Gee.
Thanks, John, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to our third quarter 2010 conference call. With me in the room today is Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer. We've got Kathy Turgeon, our CFO, Glenn Booth, our VP of Land, and Jim Grant, our Investor Awareness Representative. And we're also pleased to welcome Dave Thomas, our newest addition to the Peyto Management Team, to our quarterly conference call. Dave is our VP of Exploration. Dave's a pretty well-known individual inside the walls of Peyto, having been a significant part of our exploration group for the past 5 years. But perhaps he's a bit of a new voice for our unit holders, so welcome, Dave. And Jim, why don't I turn the call over to you?
Okay, for those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of the investment community. To welcome Dave here, I think it's appropriate he gets to answer the first question. So Dave, welcome to your new role here, and as our new VP of Exploration, would you like to give us your thoughts on what the biggest change for you has been in the last year, other than your new position here?
Thank you, Jim. The biggest change or the biggest challenge in this past year has been, I think, the transition that Peyto has undergone from drilling vertical wells to horizontal wells in such a short time period. When we finished 2009, Peyto had just two horizontal wells drilled and on production. 2010 has been very different. By mid-December, we've drilled or spud 47 additional horizontal wells. In fact, Peyto has drilled only one vertical well since spring breakup. Now, these horizontal wells are more difficult to plan, drill, and complete, but our team at Peyto has been up to the task, and here we are, the end of 2010, with record production and a tremendous inventory of drilling projects in front of us.
Great. And now I'm going to ask Darren. There have been a lot of changes over the last year for Peyto, and there are more to come. One of those changes is the change to a corporation from the current trust structure. Can you outline the remaining steps in this process?
Sure, Jim. Unitholders should see in the mail a booklet that Peyto's just mailed out here. I think it went out November 5th, or printed November 5th, and mailed the next day, I think, or shortly thereafter. I'd recommend everybody read it. It's got lots of good information in it. You know, primarily it's got, obviously, the notice of the special meeting, and that's going to be held on December 8th at the offices of Burnett, Duckworth & Palmer, a law firm here in Calgary. It's not a big meeting, and there won't be any presentation, so obviously, unit holders don't have to attend in person if they don't want to. In that booklet is a notice of the application to the court, the information circular describing the process of the conversion, the reasons behind it, how the exchange of trust units for shares is going to work, information on the new corp, a bunch of other details. There's a proxy statement or a ballot, and that voting process will be very similar to how people vote their units at the AGM or for the AGM. There'll be electronic online access to vote those shares too. So that should be very similar. And then, of course, the plan of arrangement itself and all the steps, the legal steps to convert the trust back to a corporation and wrap up the trust structure. So, you know, there's a lot of pieces of paper there, but really, you know, the vote in December, unit holders obviously should be very aware of that, and then filing of a bunch of pieces of paper to the end of the year, and then at the start of the year, we begin trading again as Peyto Exploration and Development Corp., symbol PEY on the Toronto.
Familiar, but a change nonetheless.
Yeah.
And another major change of this year has been the growth of production over this conference call time last year. And I'm going to direct the next question to Scott Robinson, our VP of Operations and our COO. Scott, where does our production level currently sit, and can you give us an idea of the range of production we might expect over the remaining 2 months this year?
Sure. We've just recently completed another new Nautikeeban horizontal, and with that well, we sit just above 28,000 barrels. You know, a marked step from our quarterly number of 23.8 that we announced today. In fact, we're just finishing the final few completion stages of a Cardium horizontal, and later this week and over the next week and a half, we've got two more back-to-back Wilrich horizontals in the queues. with those wells and about another 10 to 12 wells that we anticipate over the balance of the year, we would expect to hit the 29,000 level by the end of November here, and we're shooting for a level above 30,000 by the end of the year. It's not inconceivable if these wells all deliver that it might even be higher than that. But of course, this depends on continued favorable conditions to execute this work and on favorable outcomes from these wells. So we've got a few more steps to take to finish the year off, but it looks very, very, very promising.
Okay. And turning to Kathy Turgeon, our CFO and VP of Finance. Kathy, another change that's coming up fast for us is the conversion of our reporting to IFRS from Canadian Generally Accepted Accounting Practices. Are we ready for this change? When do we start reporting using IFRS? And will it delay any of our financial statements?
Well, Jim, our IFRS conversion project is well underway, and we'll have no problem meeting the deadlines for conversion and reporting. We'll start reporting under IFRS in Q1 of 2011, and all of our 2010 comparatives will be restated to IFRS from our current reporting under Canadian GAAP. We're not anticipating any delay in the release of our Q1 2011 results due to this conversion.
Okay, and back to you, Dave. In terms of using that capital budget, we've often noted that we have a tremendous depth and breadth of drilling opportunities on our lands. Can you give us a rough estimate of the number of firm locations that are of the same nature as the prospects we're developing right now? And how do we determine the priority in which we pursue those opportunities?
Jim, we just finished an internal review of our horizontal drilling opportunities. We evaluated all of our main target zones, focusing on the Cardium, the Wilrich, the Notikewin, and the Falher. And we've identified over 400 inventory horizontal drilling locations on our southern core lands. That's over 7 years of horizontal drilling at our current level of activity. And this does not include any inventory for our northern lands or for the Cardium, both of which could provide tremendous upside once validated by horizontal drilling. Now, the second part of your question, prioritizing drilling opportunities, it might seem simple on the face of it, drill the best wells first, but it actually is more complicated. At Peyto, we want to maintain a balanced portfolio of drilling projects that we can rely on to provide us with predictable growth with a lower overall risk profile. And there are cliches you can use, such as not putting all your eggs in one basket, but there's some truth behind the cliches. Now, with today's low natural gas prices and high oil prices, Peyto is placing an elevated priority on Cardium horizontal drilling opportunities. Even though the Cardium well performance or reservoir deliverability is often not as strong from our Wilrich or our Notikewin zone, we will also drill wells with a higher risk profile if they will prove out significant additional new drilling opportunities for us. And there are sometimes reasons for projects to jump to the front of the line, such as when a Crown Petroleum and Natural Gas drilling lease nears the end of its term and will expire unless we drill it. So those projects might proceed, even though the rate of return is lower than other projects. So Jim, there's actually a lot of considerations we made in prioritizing our projects, but generally, we're aiming to achieve a balanced portfolio, which will provide reliable growth, a strong rate of return, which will also prove up lands, and is flexible enough to capitalize on the prevailing commodity prices.
Okay. Darren, with our amazing production growth and the low commodity prices that we've seen, it still left us with a considerable growth of our funds from operations over the third quarter last year. When we look ahead to 2011 with a capital budget of $250 to $275 million, could we sustain the process at current energy prices? What will the difference in dividend rate from our distribution, the production levels we're expecting, the retained cash flow, all fit together with our credit lines and our other sources of capital?
Jim, I think as we've communicated in some of our press releases of late, I think definitely we believe we can sustain that kind of growth and that same progress. You know, the great thing about our cost structure is that we generate very good netbacks and rates of return at this gas price of $3 to $3.50 a gigajoule. you know, if the price stays right here and our production grows, we'll be growing our cash flow. That's just, you know, what's going to happen, which is the way it should be. I mean, production, operating costs, those are the things we control. So, you know, if price can stay flat, then all we have to focus on is the things that we control. You know, as for the balance of cash in versus cash out, I think the new dividend level is much more aligned with higher levels of capital spending. Growth that we're delivering on a per unit basis is much more material, really, than the income component of that cash on cash yield. And we easily have the, you know, the bank lines to make up any small shortfall to balance all of that off. So, you know, I think the larger question for us here at Peyto is, how do we accelerate 7 years of drilling inventory? You know, Dave mentioned all the locations that we already have in the hopper, the good quality that we've got. Yes, we've got a lot of prioritization and sorting to do. You know, how do we fund that acceleration? We've talked before about generating these big returns. The challenge really at Peyto is to scale it up, and that is what we're busy working on today.
Okay. Turning to Glenn Booth, our VP of Land. Glenn, we've seen an increase in Alberta land sale activity this year over last. Just what are the differences in activity and average prices between gas-prone areas and oil-prone areas?
Well, Jimmy, right, land sale activity this year in Alberta has been brisk, to say the least. Both, I'd say, the increase in price per acre, but also the volume of acreage that's been acquired has increased significantly. And I know in the northern areas of Alberta, we've noticed large blocks of land, but deep rights with those large blocks have attracted very handsome prices, and that's been factored into this aggressive sort of land price that we've seen for this year. So I think what we're seeing is components of area-related increases, but we're also seeing that the molecules that you're chasing have had some impact on the prices and the activity. In my view, I think the medium to large cap companies have been very active. They've been very successful in acquiring lands at these sales, and I'd say those companies that have generated a lot of oil plays, a lot of high deliverability conventional and unconventional gas, but don't forget about the liquid rich, which the Cardium would fall into, and that's where Peyto has been very active. Year to date, the Crown has collected about $2 billion in sales, and the average cost per acre is $270 an acre. And this is up significantly from last year. But what I tell you as far as Peyto is concerned, that we embarked on a strategy back in the early spring that we felt we could amass a number of prospects and lands in this low gas price environment. So we were busy posting land for the summer months and for the fall, and I'm pleased to report that we've acquired in excess of 80 sections of lands on prospects. That's more than two townships. And prospects, like Dave has talked a bit about, to us when we're posting these lands, is going to meet a hurdle of the sense that it's going to have some geological support, possibly some geophysical. Accessibility through most times of the year is important. But really the most driving part is the fact that it's close to our infrastructure and facilities. And so that plays a large role in how these things get folded into the lineup. So very pleased that we've amassed a large land position. The cost of doing that was very inexpensive in my estimation. We spent less than $5.8 million, and the average price per acre is about $109 an acre, so considerably less than the average for the province. So very pleased with what we've amassed here now to increase our undeveloped land position, and I'm sure that trend will continue as we wrap up this year and get into next year also.
Great. Scott? With a year of experience drilling and completing horizontal wells, what have been the expected and unexpected impacts to our costs? And how does that compare to our nearby competitors drilling the same types of wells?
Well, as one might expect, the complexity of these horizontal wells does provide some additional challenges and risks compared to verticals. Some of those problems that one might encounter include drill fluid losses, directional steering challenges, breaking out a zone, and sticking drill pipes. So those are some of the things that we're faced with, the latter one being potentially the most costly. We're not immune to those problems. We've had a few of them. However, it's really how you respond to those problems or challenges that matters the most. And we're pretty proud of the way that we have performed. Our entire operations staff managed those challenges and minimized those problems very well over the course of the year. Brian Lang, our drilling manager, recently determined the cost impact of some of the challenges that we've had over our 31 gross wells. His numbers indicate that the problem-related costs that we've endured are only about 3.7% of our total $160 million that we spend. So it's been a very low problem frequency in our case, and it's something that we'll continue to focus on. With respect to the second part of your question, our guys also recently pulled together some comparative competitor data on drilling and completions. Both Brian and Joe Foose, our completions manager, reviewed public data for a number of wells for our competitors in and around our area who are actively drilling horizontals. And they've determined that those competitors' wells are ranging from $6 to $7 million per well on a drill and complete basis fairly regularly, and that's a fairly large population of wells. That compares to our drill and complete costs, which are averaging about $4.3 million. So, you know, that's another aspect of our business that we're very pleased with and that we think we measure up well to our competitors on.
Dave, before the end of 2009, we proved the application of horizontal wells in the Wilrich and Cardium formations. In 2010, we have tested a few other formations, including the Cadam and Fowler, and we are currently drilling a Cardium test well in a northern area. Can you give us some idea of the success of those new applications? And can you comment on other new targets we might test in 2011?
Jim, this year we added the Nauticuan and Valer to our list of proven horizontal well targets, in addition to the Wilrich and Cardium, which you mentioned. We had high expectations for our Nauticuan horizontals, and our drilling results have justified our expectations. Three of our Nauticuan wells have delivered first full month production rates ranging from 750 barrels of oil equivalent per day to over 1,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day. Our internal expectations for the Fuller were more modest, but we've been very pleased with the results in our second Fuller horizontal well that is currently drilling. For 2011, Beto is planning 9 new Nauticuan horizontal wells and 6 new Fuller horizontal wells. Now, Pato's first horizontal test of the Cadman was less successful. It was operationally challenging, and our horizontal well bore lateral leg short and included an unexpectedly long portion of non-reservoir shale. The well results were disappointing at just over 180 barrels of oil equivalent per day during the first full week of production, but only one frac port was effectively stimulated in the completion. However, the resource potential of the Cadam is very large on Pato lands, and 2 additional horizontal tests are scheduled for Q1 and Q3 of 2011. To round out the testing of new targets for 2010, Pato has just spud and is drilling its first horizontal well in the northern Cardium in the Kakwa area. Now, the Kakwa area has some of the Cardium's highest liquid yields for Pato, and we are keenly awaiting the results. In 2011, Pato will also drill horizontal wells to test liquids-rich Cardium on our northern Cutbank, Chine, Kiskew, and Leyland properties. Favorable drilling results in these areas will have a significant impact on our already large drilling inventory.
Okay. Scott, with approximately 30 gross horizontal wells now on stream, are we gaining any confidence in the expected reserve levels for the different types of wells? In addition, the majority of the wells are exhibiting a very high initial production rate. Does this front-end loading of cash flow play a significant role in well economics?
Yeah, Jim, we are gaining some clarity with respect to the level of ultimate recovery that we might expect from these wells, although it's still very, very important to emphasize it's very early on these wells. We have approximately a half dozen of the wells with 6 or more months of production history, a few of them with a full year. The decline performance of these more mature wells suggesting that they're headed towards ultimate recoveries that range in the 3 to 6 BCF range, possibly even higher, but you know that will remain to be determined. This recovery level is consistent with theoretical work that we've done and with some other reported recovery levels that we're seeing from other operators. I know it's a wide range, but it will tighten up with time and with additional performance from the wells. With respect to the high production rate starting point for our wells, yes, there is a real front-end or early time high cash flow from these wells. And it's this early cash flow production and this leading to capital payout durations that are ranging from about a year to a year and a half. One of the key points to note is that this feature of early cash flow performance will carry very strong project economics for either end of that reserve range that we're currently looking at. And this feature will also provide very, very meaningful funding back into our capital program for our ongoing growth. In fact, it's estimated that the wells that we drill this year have contributed all to the end of the third quarter anywhere from $40 to $50 million of our cash flow. So it's a very substantial recycle of cash flow back into the growth equation.
Okay. Kathy, as we convert to a corporation, what exactly is our tax situation going to be? Will our tax pools keep us from having to pay cash taxes, and how long will they last?
Well, Jim, really the major difference between the trust and the corporate structure is the tax treatment of the payments to the shareholders or under a trust the unitholders. As a corporation, we're going to be paying dividends, and dividends are an after-tax at the corporate level distribution. While trust distributions are really, under the trust structure, are really flowing our taxable income up to be taxed in the hands of the unit holders. So as Peyto continues to be and will continue to be a profitable entity, we'll have taxable income in the future. However, we do have very large tax pools. After we do our 2010 taxes, we should have about $850 million of tax pools remaining to shelter this taxable income. So we estimate that the pools we have now will last for about 3 years. And then in addition, the capital spending over those next 3 years will give us another 2 to 3 years shelter against paying cash taxes. Therefore, we have quite a large horizon for cash taxability. And as Peyto continues to spend capital, that horizon will continue to be pushed out.
Okay. And Darren, we've announced some aggressive targets, and we suggest that the next year may be even more aggressive in terms of capital spending than this year at $250 to $275 million. Based on the success to date and the large inventory of high-quality opportunities, is it possible that we will accelerate our capital program even further in 2011?
Well, that's definitely the goal, Jim. You know, as a management group, we're looking at that scale up to get after these opportunities. And so the acceleration is something that we're really focused on. You know, of course, there's several variables that factor into our ability to do that, not the least of which is gas prices. You know, I've commented to many of the people that I've met recently that we're probably the only gas producer out there that's hoping gas prices stay low. I know that sounds crazy, but when the price is low, we're still generating good cash flow, we're still generating good returns, but we don't have the service cost inflation or really the competition for services that happens when, you know, the price is high. You know, so if gas prices stay low and we're able to continue to grow aggressively and generate good returns, then we're going to keep activity levels as high as we can. You heard Dave talk earlier about the large inventory of quality locations that we have in the hopper. You know, the issue is really more pace of execution, access to those available services, learning from our results. You know, we want to make sure that we prioritize our locations and learn from every result as we go. We've got to obviously keep up with processing capacity, facility expansions, increasing transportation service, those kind of things, but so far we've been able to stay in front of the growing production with our infrastructure. All those things are way easier to do, though, when the industry is less active. As soon as the industry gets really busy, that challenges our ability to then execute. We're competing at a higher level. So as long as the environment stays like it is today, then we're going to be as aggressive as we can possibly be, you know, really pushing the envelope of our activity.
Okay. John, I'd like us to turn over the call to questions from the investors and representatives of the investment community now. So if you could do that for us.
We have a question from Herbert Molnar of Cycle. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. Just give us a little bit of discussion, if you would, please, on how you manage the conversation, allocating capital. between the emerging projects and then the emerging footprint of the Guardian. So not only do you have a deep inventory of things to do, but if you can sustain success in context with Flyer, if you can move into higher liquid content, Guardian and move into North, how do you manage that interface in terms of allocating capital to something that maybe has a higher risk profile versus something that's not already known?
Thanks a lot for that question, Kurt. This is Scott Robinson here. We don't have a magic recipe. We are constantly reviewing results and the economics associated with them. That is certainly a leading consideration in how we'll allocate the capital amongst those opportunities. In addition, facility capacities, as Darren stated, will also guide us on those matters. As David stated earlier, we like to address the most economic projects on a priority basis, but we also like to distribute in there other projects just to keep a very balanced approach to our activity level. So the challenge is there, but it's a real exciting challenge for us to spread the capital amongst all of those opportunities.
You know, Kurt, I would add to that, you know, one of the long-standing successes of Peyto, I think, is that we've always focused on converting, you know, our opportunities going forward to cash flow as quickly as possible. You know, from the minute we start spending capital until that production is on stream and generating positive cash flow, that timeline is very short. And we're seeing in the industry now, I think, a lot of operators de-risking, as they're calling it, their asset base, testing out these large tracts of resource potential. But in some cases, they're not able to convert it to cash flow quickly. And, you know, being able to pay back that capital quickly, you know, getting that cash back so that we can put it back to work in the ground is very important consideration. So, you know, as much as you want to prove up a lot of inventory, prove up a lot of potential, you've got to get that capital generating cash flow very quickly. And so I think that's been one of the keys to Peyto's success is the speed at which we can get cash generating out of those capital investments and the speed at which we can get our capital back.
But just as a follow-up in that regard, what do you see as the potential size of capital or effort that'll be needed as you move further north on the Cardium trend in terms of sizing out the potential need for incremental infrastructure, and will there be much in the way of greenfield requirements that way, or is it really just adding on to existing footprint?
Well, as you know, we've got a couple of plants further north, Kakwa. We've got a large facility, and we've got a cut bank facility as well. And so obviously, as we test out the Cardium trend, we're going to be doing it proximal to those facilities so we can convert those. The cut bank plant has a significant amount of room. It's a 10 million a day plant. I think it's about a third full or something around that range.
The refrigeration is actually good for 20, so yeah, there's a lot of room there.
And our Kakwa facility, you know, I think, again, we've got some capacity there to bring initial volumes in. And all these facilities, of course, are they're those modular, they're very modern facilities that are modular in design. They're simple and easy for us to sort of double the capacities by doubling up on the facilities. I mean, as you've seen this year, it took very little capital for us to build quite a bit of capacity into our infrastructure because we've already got that footprint there. We're really just expanding an existing site in many cases. You know, we're obviously going to focus on those first, and that'll help prove up the trend a little more. And as we gain increasing confidence there, then we can look at, you know, is there additional areas where perhaps we do need a grassroots facility to be built, and what are the considerations there? But it's nice that these are sweet facilities, obviously. You know, they're liquids rich, but the extraction is not overly complicated. I think the turnaround time to build a brand new facility, for instance, is still not that long.
And just one final follow-up in terms of disclosure on the Kakwa Cardium. When might results be available to you, and would you plan on sharing them with the street initially, or would you pursue several wells before talking about it?
Well, obviously, one is not a very statistically representative test of an area, so, you know, as much as the first result is going to be interesting, I think, practically speaking, we're going to have several results, really, before it's going to mean too much. You know, really, we got five or six Nauticuan results so far, and even there, there's quite a bit of variability. We've got some incredible results and then some poor quality results, too, so even to this point, hard to say that we've ever drilled an average well, really, in the Nauticuan. So I think, you know, practically speaking, we're probably going to need a handful of results before it's going to mean much. I think what maybe will give you an indication of how happy we are with the results is, you know, how quickly we're licensing wells in that area and how quickly we're getting after some of the upside. As Dave mentioned, you know, the upside potential is large, obviously, and so these first few tests are really going to give us the confidence to expand quickly the opportunities up there.
Thanks, guys. Outstanding numbers.
Thanks, Kurt.
Thank you. Once again, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad for a question. The next question is from Jules Bibelises of Tigers Trading. Please go ahead.
Hello. I missed part of the call. I hope this hasn't already been covered, but I wondered what Pito has any strategic plan in terms of the possible LNG export from Canada to perhaps Asia, Europe, etc.
Thanks, Jules. Obviously, as a gas producer, we pay close attention to natural gas developments in Canada. You know, the Kitimat LNG facility that's sort of underway still sits on a fairly long timeline, though. I think first flows were, I think, projected to be sort of 2015 for exports there. But, you know, obviously the entire world market for natural gas and LNG is rapidly evolving. You know, there's a lot of import capacity available in North America. That's in some ways quickly being addressed to see if we can't make that export capacity in North America. I know down in the United States, for instance, there's a couple of terminals already that are looking at exporting LNG. There's some restrictions there, of course, but and then the rest of the world, we're seeing much higher gas prices in the rest of the world than we're experiencing here in North America. So obviously demand for the product is increasing dramatically, and you know there's a lot more tankers being contemplated, a lot more movement of natural gas. And really, I think, longer term, it's a globalization of the commodity that is good for us and good for Canada and good for North America, which at this current time has an abundance of natural gas. So, you know, we're obviously keeping tabs on it as it pertains to our business and the long-term value of the assets that we're building, but practically speaking, we have to live in today's cost environment and today's commodity price environment, and fortunately, we have such a low operating cost, you know, one that really leads the industry and gives us a huge advantage to make a good business at these commodity prices. We're not sitting back waiting for something in the world to happen to increase natural gas prices in North America. We've got great returns being generated today, good access to service, and we're really excited about what we can do even at these levels.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. G. Please go ahead.
Okay. Well, thanks, John, and thanks for everyone that participated in today's call. See, there's a lot of people listening in, so hopefully we've answered a bunch of those questions. Go ahead and jump back in, John, if there was one popping up at the last. You know, I would say this has been a very exciting year at Peyto, one of our most exciting, in fact, and, you know, I've been at Peyto here for almost 10 years now, and this year's not even over yet. We've still got a couple more months of a lot of activity to get done, and this has really been an amazing year for us in the Deep Basin. As both Scott and Dave had talked about earlier in the call, we did a lot of homework before applying this new technology. We did a lot of research. We've been very careful in the execution not to take on risks that we couldn't manage. You know, and I think that now has really been paying off in spades. And, you know, in 2011, we look forward to even bigger and better, but very similar type of results, I think, in 2011. So we're extremely excited about finishing off this year with a bang and seeing what we can do next year in terms of scaling up this same type of result, only on a bigger level. So stay tuned and keep track of the progress off the website and our presentations and my monthly reports. And we'll be back talking to you in the new year. So thanks again.